Welcome to Fire in a Bottle, the podcast, part two, The Fat Pigs. I think this is going to be a fun episode. We're going to talk about an experiment that was actually done by a company that was making a special kind of soybean oil. And so this was done to sell soybean oil. They wanted to demonstrate that their soybean oil was better than regular soybean oil. And the only thing that they had done to it is they removed the alpha-linolenic acid, which is the omega-3 triply unsaturated polyunsaturated fat from the olive oil, or from the soybean oil, or at least they'd removed most of it. And so this episode, we're going to talk about that. And what why I love that experiment so much is it perfectly demonstrates the ideas from the ROS theory of obesity that I've written about on my website that I pretty much lifted directly from Peter Dropper-Milsky over at the blog Hyperlipid, and also the SCD1 theory of obesity, or the torpor theory of obesity as I now refer to it, that I talk extensively on my blog. And the idea there is that the obesity and diabetes starts with consumption of polyunsaturated fat. Torpor starts by consuming linoleic acid, but it doesn't stop there. When you really get into problems is when these enzyme systems start changing, and that results in a rise of oleic acid, the monounsaturated fat. And so oleic acid, the monounsaturated fat, is the primary component of olive oil. And so it's somewhat controversial to say oleic acid is bad, right? Because it seems to be the place in the middle where everyone can meet, right? People who are ketogenic, pro animal foods, and people who are vegan can sort of, the oleic acid is, right? It's an area of common ground that everyone can be happy with. And now here I am saying, actually, when you look at the literature, the primary indicator, or one of the main indicators, that of your risk of diabetes, of developing diabetes over the next 10 years, is the amount of oleic acid in your stored body fat. And I'm going to explain to you why that is. This experiment was done on what is called an Ossabaw Island pig. Ossabaw pigs are pretty cool. They were, when Europeans first discovered North America, and I should say that probably Nordic fishermen knew about America way before the Spanish did, and Christopher Columbus. But anyway, if you want to think that Christopher Columbus discovered America, one of the things that the Spanish did soon after, quote, discovering America, was they immediately loaded up boats with pigs and cattle. And they came back to the New World and they dropped off these pigs and cattle. And of course, they also brought smallpox. And so the smallpox eliminated a huge chunk of the human population, and suddenly there were these large grazing animals, and they thrived in this new environment. They also brought seeds of things like bluegrass and white clover, which are low-growing plants with very low growing points that are great for grazing animals to graze on. And so the Europeans sort of seeded the New World with this old school system of agriculture. And most of those animals, of course, are those wild animals dropped off, descended into like, or I shouldn't say descended, evolved into things like Texas longhorns and mulefoot pigs, which I used to raise on my farm, which was an old homestead hog in the southeastern U.S. But some of the pigs were dropped on a place called Ossabaw Island, which is off the coast of Georgia. And that was not a particularly food-rich place for a pig. I mean, it's not a bad place. It's about 8 miles wide and 8 to 10 miles north to south, something like that. The pigs would have been forced to graze, and I don't know if there's much in the way of acorns there. There probably are oak trees. Seasonally, they would get acorns. It's a marshy place. Pigs actually love to play in water and eat things like crabs. They'll dig in the water and catch frogs and crabs. And so I'm sure they ate a lot of that. Pigs also are grazing animals. Some people don't think of pigs as grazing animals, but I ran a rotational grazing hog farm, and I can assure you that pigs graze pretty aggressively. In fact, they're pretty clever. If you watch them, they'll take in big mouths of grass. Pigs aren't ruminants, so they can't digest fiber that well, but they'll take in big mouthfuls of plants, and they literally chew them up, suck the juices out of them, and then they spit out the fibers. So when the pigs are grazing, you'll find these little bright green balls, these little fibrous bundles of spat out grasses that they've sucked the sugars out of. And they also will eat things like Canadian thistle, which is the leaves are almost like dandelion leaves, but they have these sharp prickles on them that kind of point upwards and outwards. And so if you watch them eat the thistles, they bite them off at the bottom of the leaf and then they swallow it so that the prickles point out, right? They're not pointing into their throat. And so they eat them backwards so that they can swallow them. I used to tell my farm manager this all the time. And the other person who worked here, and they wouldn't believe me until finally I caught a video where you can clearly see a pig eating Canada thistle. So they do indeed graze, and they can exist on pure pasture. But in an environment like Asaba, they certainly would have been catching frogs. And it's on saltwater, so they were probably on the beach eating crabs. Digging, you know, they can dig for the crabs that live in the near the shore. And so there was plenty of food for pigs to get by there, but when animals are on small islands, they often develop something called insular dwarfism. So that means animals that live in small environments will get smaller. And since the pigs would have had plenty to eat there, but not a massive amount, they developed this kind of low grade diabetes. And so these pigs are quite easy to fatten. And in fact, given unlimited food, will develop pretty regularly, develop obesity and diabetes. And in fact, they even develop heart disease. And they're one of the only animal models that will spontaneously, perhaps the only animal model that will spontaneously develop heart disease. So that's all pretty interesting. And that is why I like the Asaba pig as a model. They're also about the same size as humans. They're omnivores like humans. They have the same organ sizes, like the same size liver and heart. And so it just seems to me like a really good, smart model if we want to study how food affects humans, right? And dietary choices affect humans. And so that's one of the reasons I'm really excited about this study, is it was done on Asaba pigs. Okay, so I wanted to go over quick first the ROS theory of obesity and the torpor theory of obesity, so that when we talk about the actual experiment, you'll know what to expect. So the ROS theory of obesity, like I say, was heavily influenced by the writing of Peter Dabomilsky at Hyperlipid. And the basic idea is this. It boils down to mitochondrial science. And in the mitochondria, as we oxidize our food, and this could be glucose or it could be fat, we send the fuel through this cycle called the TCA cycle, or the citric acid cycle. And in that cycle, the electrons from the fuel are handed to two molecules. One's called FADH2, and the other one is called NADH. And those things hand their electrons into, well, NADH, the electrons from that are handed into complex one of the mitochondrial electron transport chain, and the electrons from FADH2 are handed to complex two. Okay, I know that's a lot of gibberish, but here's the important thing. Complex one and complex two in the mitochondria both have to hand their electrons to another thing called coenzyme Q. And so that creates a bottleneck. If a lot of electrons are moving through complex one and complex two at the same time, coenzyme Q can't keep up. It gets overloaded, and the electrons come back out into the mitochondria as free electrons, and they form reactive oxygen species. And the reactive oxygen species get converted pretty quickly into hydrogen peroxide. And that generation of hydrogen peroxide shuts off insulin signaling. So when you eat, insulin is released. Insulin is telling your cells to take up energy, right? You take a glucose into your cells, and then you have to do things with it. You can either burn it or you can store it. Same thing with fat. Insulin's telling your cells to take up fat, and it's telling your fat cells to stop releasing fat to feed the rest of your body. And so insulin stops what are called free fatty acids, which are the fats that are floating around in your bloodstream that cells can eat. So if your fat cells stop releasing fat, and if your cells are taking up and storing fat, then you will tend to get fat, right? And so there has to be a way. And after you eat a meal, you need to take in the nutrients. So that's logical, but there needs to be a way to turn off the signal from insulin at a reasonable time after the meal. And so what happens is within your cells, if a lot of electrons are entering that electron transport chain through complex one and complex two at the same time, that bottleneck gets overwhelmed and these reactive oxygen species are produced, and the reactive oxygen species are actually the thing that shuts off insulin signaling. And so when we think about satiety or satiety at a cellular level, it happens because of the production of reactive oxygen species after a meal. And so the thing that affects the amount of FADH2 and NADH, well, there's a couple of things. In Peter's latest posts, he's arguing that when you're eating pure starch, when your mitochondria are making pure starch, the FADH2 to NADH ratio is around 0.5. And if you're burning something like stearic acid or palmitic acid, which are long-chain saturated fats, the FADH2 to NADH ratio is about 0.49. And so within a reasonable time after a meal, things that are around 0.5, if those are what you're burning in your mitochondria, you're going to generate enough ROS to stop insulin from signaling, and your cells are going to stop taking in energy, and they're going to start burning energy. And your fat cells are going to start releasing fat again for the rest of the body to eat so that you're burning your own fat. But the problem with polyunsaturated fats is they have a much lower FADH2 to NADH ratio. And so if you eat a lot of polyunsaturated fats, you're not able to generate the reactive oxygen species at that bottleneck, and your cells will continue to take in energy when stimulated by insulin, and you'll be pulling in blood glucose into your cells and doing de novo lipogenesis, which means making fat from it, and you'll be storing that energy rather than saying no to insulin. And you will be very insulin sensitive if you eat polyunsaturated fats. And this is something that Peter has called pathological insulin sensitivity. So polyunsaturated fats, yes, make you more responsive to insulin and therefore more likely to store energy rather than burning it. So that's the ROS theory in a nutshell. The torpor theory is sort of starts from there. So the first part of that process is indeed consuming those polyunsaturated fats. But over time, those polyunsaturated fats will oxidize. And I talked about this in the first episode, but alpha-linolenic acid, that triply unsaturated omega-3 polyunsaturated fat that is, I think it's around 7% of soybean oil, that's highly prone to something called auto-oxidation. If you take flaxseed oil, sorry, pause there. I was trying to make sure I had the names right. If you take flaxseed oil, which is almost, it's very, very high in alpha-linolenic omega-3 fats, and you oxidize it, which all you have to do is boil it. They call it, it becomes linseed oil. Linseed oil is wood polish. If you've ever used linseed oil, it smells very bad. All it is if you just take flaxseed oil and boil it, you will get linseed oil because the linolenic acid oxidizes very easily all by itself. Linoleic acid is the omega-6 doubly unsaturated polyunsaturated fat. That also auto-oxidizes, but not nearly so much as the triply unsaturated. So what happens is if you eat a lot of polyunsaturated fat, first you become pathologically insulin sensitive. Then over time, as that alpha-linolenic acid auto-oxidizes, it becomes, polyunsaturated fats are preferentially built into our membranes. So your circulating blood cells have a lot of polyunsaturated fat in the membranes because they're membranes. And the alpha-linolenic acid in your LDL, so when you eat food, you eat fat, your liver makes fat through de novo lipogenesis, it packs it into what are called VLDL. And that is something that you, on your, if you ever get a lipid panel in your blood, that would be under the category of triglycerides, the amount of fat in this VLDL released by the liver. And what the liver is doing is it's repackaging the free fatty acids that your fat cells are releasing, any fat that comes in through your diet, any fat that's made through de novo lipogenesis, the liver's packing that all back together into these things. They're kind of like little cells. They're not exactly cells, but they do have phospholipid membranes. And it's releasing those back into the bloodstream as VLDL. And if cells are hungry, they'll bite off a chunk of it and it gets smaller and smaller. And it eventually becomes LDL. And that is seen on your lipid panel as, quote, bad cholesterol. And if you eat a lot of alpha-linolenic acid, which is highly prone to auto-oxidation, you're more likely to have what they call oxidized LDL, which is just an LDL floating around, and a lot of the polyunsaturated fat in it is oxidized. That oxidized LDL triggers something in your liver called the aryl hydrocarbon receptor. That aryl hydrocarbon receptor increases expression of these cytochrome P450 enzymes, and they oxidize PUFA. Oxidized PUFA in the liver is a signal to PPAR gamma, which is the master regulator of fat making. That stimulates PPAR gamma to upregulate lipogenic genes, including SREBP1C, and SCD1, fatty acid synthase, elongase, and the rest. Now you are torpid. That's how torpor works. When you become torpid, what happens is a lot of your fat is now, since you've upregulated this lipogenic protein process, this fat-making process. So instead of your fats being things obtained from your diet, they're going to be fats that your body made. And your body can only make basically the process of lipogenesis ends with palmitic acid, which is a 16 carbon saturated fat. And then there's an elongase, which extends it into stearic acid. And there's a desaturase, which takes that 18 carbon stearic acid and turns it into the 18 carbon monounsaturated oleic acid. When you look at populations, I'm going to talk about this more later, but like the EPIC Potsdam study was done in Europe, and it shows that the amount of oleic acid in your phospholipid membranes is a predictor of your risk of getting diabetes within the next 5 years. If you have a lot of oleic acid and not much stearic acid, that's called your desaturase index. And what that means is that every time that you, it means you're making a lot of the enzyme SCD1. It means that every time that you do this de novo lipogenesis, those palmitic acids are very likely to be extended into stearic acid and then desaturated into oleic acid. And so having lots of oleic acid and not much stearic acid is an indicator that you're doing a lot of lipogenesis, the levels of SCD1 are high, and you're converting all your stearic acid into oleic acid. If you're doing that, you're likely to get diabetes. You are what I would describe as torpid. Hibernating animals also upregulate SCD1 and the other lipogenic genes. So when you see a lot of this oleic acid in your stored in your adipose tissue, but also in your membrane phospholipids, that is an indicator of a torpid metabolism. I think that sets the table pretty well for the experiment that we're about to talk about. That was a lot of molecular biology. I'm sorry. You can, of course, read more about it at Fire in a Bottle if you want to figure out what all of these words I just threw at you. But I guess here's the take-home message. You have a normal animal or person or human. You have normal insulin sensitivity. Okay? You're going to have a reasonable amount of blood glucose at a reasonable amount of insulin. Then you eat some polyunsaturated fat. Now you're going to be very insulin sensitive, which means that with even a little bit of insulin, your blood glucose levels are going to drop. Think about people who become hypoglycemic, get low blood sugar after meals. You're probably very insulin sensitive. And then later, as you become closer to diabetic, your insulin levels rise, your blood glucose levels also rise because now you're becoming insulin resistant. The pigs that we're going to see in this experiment go exactly from normal to the hyperlipid ROS theory of obesity, pathologically insulin sensitive to torpid and insulin insensitive, just based on what they're fed. So, onto the experiment. So the article on my blog that I'm talking about, where I talk about this experiment, is called "Obesity-Prone Pigs Go from Normal to Pathological Insulin Sensitivity to Torpor When Given Enough PUFA," right? Kind of how I set it up. And so there's a group of pigs. So these are the Asabai Island pigs that we talked about. They're prone to diabetes and obesity. They're fed three different diets. It's ad lib, so they can eat as much of it as they want. One group is given a kind of a traditional low-fat hog diet. Another one is given a diet where they're getting about 40% of their calories from this special soybean oil, which has had the alpha-linolenic acid removed from it. And the third group of pigs is given a diet where 40% of calories are coming from just regular soybean oil with the alpha-linolenic acid. And like I said, one of the things I love so much about this experiment is it's being done to market a special type of soybean oil. That's the whole reason this experiment was done. It was not to demonstrate the principles of the blog, Fire in a Bottle, but there you have it. So anyways, the results I think are just fascinating. And you can go check out that article. Again, it's called Obesity-Prone Pigs Go from Normal to Pathological Insulin Sensitivity to Torpor When Given Enough PUFA. And if you click on the little menu icon at the top of the blog and you click on blog, you can search for obesity prone and it'll come right up. So when we look at the first group of pigs, given the low-fat diet, they're consuming about 4,700 calories a day, which would be a lot for a human, but pigs have a little bit higher metabolic rate. They're consuming obviously a lot more fat, a little bit less protein. The diet is, you know, and they're getting more carbohydrates because it's a more carbohydrate-based diet. What's amazing, or let's just start with them. So they have an insulin level of about 7. I'm not going to go get into all the units. It doesn't really matter. And they have a glucose level of around of 8.8. Okay. Now, the pigs that got the soybean oil with the alpha-linolenic acid removed, they have an insulin level of only 1.7. So the insulin level goes from 6.9 in the low-fat diet pigs to 1.7. We're talking one third? I think it's less than a third. It's like one quarter. They have one quarter the amount of insulin, and their blood glucose goes from 8.8 in the low-fat pigs to 7.8 in the high-PUFA pigs. So they have lower blood glucose levels at an insulin level that is one quarter. And so that is pathologically insulin sensitive. These pigs are really sensitive to insulin, and they're getting 40% of their calories as this alpha-linolenic acid-free soybean oil. Now, the pigs given – so that's the ROS theory of obesity. That is pathological insulin sensitivity, and they do gain a little bit more weight than the pigs on the low-fat diet. Not that much. It's less than a kilogram, so they're a little bit heavier. And then the final group is the pigs that got the regular soybean oil. Okay, so now their blood glucose is up at 9.6. So they have pretty high blood glucose, but also their insulin is at 30.9. So now we're talking the difference in insulin levels between the pigs given the soybean oil without linolenic acid and the ones with regular soybean oil. It goes from 1.7 to 30.9, and their blood glucose goes up. So, you know, the level of glucose or insulin sensitivity goes off a cliff. And the only difference in their diets is about 12 grams of alpha-linolenic acid per day. Other than that, maybe it's 13. It goes from 4.5 grams in one group of pigs to 17.6 grams in the other pigs. So you've got about a fourfold increase in this alpha-linolenic acid. Other than that, their diets are literally exactly the same. And so that tiny change led presumably to more oxidized LDL or possibly that alpha-linolenic acid was oxidizing directly in their livers, causing fodder. But somehow that bit of auto-oxidizing omega-3 PUFA caused this huge rise in their insulin resistance. They became torpid. Okay, so I said the pigs are torpid. What does that mean? Well, if we look at, so in this, they're looking at serum fat composition. And what does that mean? Well, it means all of the fats that are floating around in their bloodstream. A lot of those are in the VLDLs that I talked about before. And what we see is that, so in the quote, normal pigs, they have about 35% oleic acid, the monounsaturated fat, and they've got 14% linoleic acid, the PUFA, right? And so what happens is in the pigs that were fed the soybean oil without the linoleic acid, the ones who don't become torpid, what happens is their linoleic acid levels increase from 14% up to 25%. And their oleic acid levels go down from 35% to 31%. They go down because they got replaced by the polyunsaturated fat. Now, the last group of pigs, the ones who I say became torpid, their linoleic acid levels plunge. Okay? The linoleic acid, the polyunsaturated omega-6 fat in the normal pigs was 14%. The ones given the soybean oil without alpha-linolenic acid, it goes way up to 26%, and then in the torpid pigs, it goes way down to 12%. At the same time, the oleic acid goes from 35% to 31%, and then all the way up to 39%. And so what you see is that, you know, I'm saying that linoleic acid causes torpor, and then I'm saying torpid pigs have lower levels of linoleic acid. And how can that be? Well, it's because in a torpid animal, much more of the fat is coming from de novo lipogenesis. So in the beginning, at first, when you feed an animal polyunsaturated fat, it starts to accumulate that polyunsaturated fat, and that polyunsaturated fat crowds out the monounsaturated fat and the saturated fat. But then once the animal becomes torpid, the monounsaturated fats start to crowd out everything else. Oleic acid goes up, polyunsaturated fat goes down. That is the signature of torpor, and it's confusing, right? Because the polyunsaturated fat caused the torpor. We can see that in these pigs. And yet, the torpid pigs are the ones with the least amount of stored polyunsaturated fat. And that is, you know, it's a little ironic to wrap your head around, but that's what it is. The other thing that happens in the torpid pigs is that something called palmitoleic acid rises. Okay, what's palmitoleic acid? Well, so stearic acid is an 18-carbon saturated fat that SCD1 removes or creates one double bond in, and it becomes oleic acid, which is an 18-carbon monounsaturated fat. So palmitoleic acid is to palmitic acid as oleic acid is to stearic acid. Palmitic acid is a 16-carbon saturated fat, and SCD1 makes a single double bond in it, and it becomes palmitoleic acid, a 16-carbon monounsaturated fat. And the so there's a thing called a desaturase index. And what that is it's the monounsaturated fat divided by the saturated fat. And so there's a DI18, and that's for 18-carbon fats, and that's oleic acid divided by stearic acid. And there's a DI16, that's for 16-carbon length fats, and that's palmitoleic acid divided by palmitic acid. Okay, and it's just basic math. You just divide the monounsaturated fat by the saturated fat, and that's your answer. Now, I've made up something called the DI1600. The problem with the DI16 is that they're very small amounts of palmitoic acid compared to palmitic acid. So, you know, people get answers like 0.05, and you're comparing 0.05 to 0.03, and people are like comparing 0.05 to 0.1, and people think that 0.05 is bigger than 0.1 because 5 is bigger than 1, but because, you know, decimals confuse people. And so what I do is I take palmitoic acid, divide it by palmitic acid, and multiply by 100. And that way it's a number between like 0 and 15, and everybody knows how to compare those numbers. And so what you see in these pigs is that, so the pigs on the low-fat diet have a DI 1600, so that's palmitoic acid divided by palmitic acid times 100 of 5.4. Okay, now the pigs who got the soybean oil who did not become torpid because it didn't have enough auto-oxidizing alpha-linolenic acid, their DI 1600 also increases. It goes up to 6.1. So they're doing, so the polyunsaturated fat causes those pigs to do a little bit of lipogenesis. And we know that because they have elevated levels of SCD1, because the desaturase index is an indicator of the enzymatic activity of the enzyme SCD1. And so we see that DI 1600 goes to 5.4, or from 5.4 to 6.1. So even though those animals, those pigs, didn't become fully torpid, they are making a few more of the lipogenic genes in response to increased PUFA, but not enough to get all the way to a torpid metabolism. Now, the pigs who became torpid, their DI 1600 goes up to 7.9. And so there, you know, so the numbers go from 5.4 to normal to 6.1 and then up to 7.9. And so when you see that DI 1600 rising, that is an indicator of high lipogenic gene expression, high SCD1, and torpor. And that is all, the DI 1600 is all about the level of palmitoleic acid, which is a pretty good indicator. And so this study, now we're going to jump back into humans for a second. We're looking at a study called, long title, wait for it, Erythrocyte Membrane Phospholipid Fatty Acids, Desaturase Activity and Dietary Fatty Acids in Relation to Risk of Type 2 Diabetes in the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer and Nutrition, in parentheses, EPIC, EPIC, Potsdam study. And what that looks at is, it looks at the risk of developing diabetes over 5 years based on the fats that individuals have in their membranes of their blood cells. And so, interestingly, guess which fat in your membranes is specifically predictive of developing diabetes. Oh, guess what? It's palmitoleic acid, the 16-carbon length monounsaturated fat that is an indicator of high SCD1 levels and of high lipogenic gene expression and of torpor, right? So you can see that in the group of people with the lowest palmitoleic acid levels, that was 0.28% of phospholipids, 74 people in that group developed diabetes, and in the group that was highest, 0.73 of palmitoleic acid, you had 230 people in that group that developed diabetes. And so basically you were to the you know, and they do their adjustments for different things, but statistically you were a little more than twice as likely to get diabetes if you had high levels of palmitoleic acid. And then if you scroll down, and there's like 100 different fats, and they've got ratios, and they've got total, you know, total will make six, PUFA total, blah, blah, blah. And so then you look and you look at the numbers and you go, well, you know, and this is where people get confused, right? I'm sorry, this is a very long paper. I'm scrolling down to try. Oh, here we go. So linoleic acid, right? So the thing that I'm saying is the devil. In fact, people with high linoleic acid levels are the least likely to develop diabetes. Okay? Did you hear what I just said? People with the most linoleic acid levels in their phospholipid membranes are the least likely to develop diabetes, right? Why is that? Well, if you've been listening along, you already know why it is. It's because as you become torpid, the monounsaturated fats replace the polyunsaturated fats. And so the indicator that you're torpid is rising levels of oleic and palmitoleic acid, not rising levels of stored linoleic acid. But that doesn't mean that linoleic acid didn't cause the problem in the first place, just because people who have the most linoleic acid are the least likely to become diabetic. Get it? I know it's a little counterintuitive, but that's how it is. And so I made so I made this post on the blog called this is a good one, accumulating linoleic acid prevents diabetes, about exactly this topic. And I think it was like met with a collective like silence from the people who follow my newsletter and me on Twitter, and nobody really responded. And I think people were like, Brad, I just can't right now. But what it shows, what this article shows, is in addition, so I talk about the same three groups of pigs that we talked about, and then another group of pigs. And this is amazing. So they took lean, like normal pigs. And so what we've done in the US over the past 100 years is people wanted leaner pork. 100 years ago, they would raise these lard pigs up to just huge amounts of weight. They needed the lard dietarily, but they also used it in factories to like lubricate the gears and stuff, right? In the Industrial Revolution. And so they grew these really fat pigs, and then consumer preferences changed. They wanted leaner pigs. And so we spent 100 years selecting each generation leaner and leaner and leaner and leaner pigs until, you know, we had the other white meat, remember, from the 90s. And so somebody did this experiment on pigs. And again, they weren't, the point of this experiment was not, let's see what happens to the fat of these pigs. The point of this experiment was, is we grow sunflower seeds, and I'm wondering what is the most amount of sunflower seeds I can get away with feeding to these pigs. And so, but the nice thing is they were worried about soft pork, because once polyunsaturated fat gets in the meat, it gets greasy and gross. And so they did measure the levels of all the different fats in the pig fat. And so what they found was that so they gave the pigs either, and sunflower seeds are of course very high in polyunsaturated fats, very high in linoleic acid. And so they had four groups of pigs. They gave them either no sunflower seeds, or 13% of their diet, or 26% of their diet, or 39% of their diet as sunflower seeds. And the pigs given 39% of their diet, their stored fat got up to 54% linoleic acid. Okay? So their stored fat had as much linoleic acid as soybean oil does. Like literally as much. That is how much linoleic acid these pigs were able to accumulate. Okay. That's noteworthy, because, I mean, one, that's crazy. But also, when you look at the DI-1600, and I just want to point out that DI-1600, you can't compare too much between different tissues. Different tissues accumulate different fats at different rates. And so what these numbers happen to be fairly similar, but we were looking at phospholipids, cell membranes. We were looking at plasma fats in the first group of pigs. Now I'm talking about stored body fat. And so you can't really compare DI numbers between different tissues. So now we're looking at adipose tissue. So the numbers are going to be different. And so don't compare these pigs to the other pigs. Compare them to ones at different amounts of sunflower seeds. So the pigs given zero sunflower seeds have a DI 1600 of 11.6. The ones given 13% sunflower seeds have a DI 1600 of 8.5. The ones that got 26% sunflower seeds are all the way down to 6.5. And the ones given 39% sunflower seeds, their DI 1600 goes all the way down to 6.0. So in pigs that are genetically lean, pigs that have been selected for 100 years not to get fat, those pigs genetically do not increase their level of lipogenic genes in response to polyunsaturated fats. That's why they don't get fat. They have found a way to turn off their torpor program. That's what keeps them lean. And so they can accumulate linoleic acid all day long without ever becoming torpid. I said in that article, the superpower of lean pigs is accumulating linoleic acid. For whatever reason, they can build it up and store it up, and they never, maybe it doesn't oxidize. I don't know the exact reason, but for whatever reason, could be hypermethylation of those genes, but they never turn on SCD1. And so I said, and this is another thing that I think kind of blew people's minds a little bit. I said in the SCD1 theory of obesity, polyunsaturated fat reduces SCD1 levels. And it does. The right amount of polyunsaturated fat, depending on the genetic background of the individual, does in fact decrease SCD1 levels. This makes sense if the organism is trying to maintain a certain FADH2 to NADH ratio. You want to have the right amount of saturation. So if you eat a little polyunsaturated fat, you make less monounsaturated fat, right? Pretty logical, except that in, you know, the pigs that are prone to become fat, when they eat PUFA, they upregulate the lipogenic genes. They start doing de novo lipogenesis. Monounsaturated fats rise. In things that are resistant to obesity, resistant to torpor, resistant to lipogenesis, they just keep building up linoleic acid all day, and they never turn on those monounsaturated fat-producing genes. And that is why, in the context of a society where everyone is eating PUFA and everyone is eating linoleic acid all the time because it's in everything, having high amounts of linoleic acid predicts that you will not get diabetes. And having a lot of palmitoleic acid, the monounsaturated fat, predicts that you will get diabetes. So if you want to check your own levels of these fats, I think it's a really good idea to have an eye on. I think it's a really interesting insight into what your body's doing. Like, are you a linoleic acid accumulator, or are you more likely to be torpid, right? And so you can see a lot of that. So there's a test that I like. I don't know that I love it, but you go with the test you have, not with the test that you wish you had. And I think it works well. It measures your red blood cell phospholipids. And so those are the membrane fats in your red blood cells. If I had my druthers, I would probably measure total serum fats like they did in the one pig study, but that is the test that we have, and I think it's accurate. The only reason I maybe don't love the membrane phospholipids is the membranes tend to prefer to use polyunsaturated fats. So I think it distorts the amount of polyunsaturated fats that you have accumulated in your adipose tissues a bit. But like I say, it's the test we have, and it's called the Omega Quant Complete test. And that's OMEGAQUANT complete. I'm actually a sponsor of theirs, so I have a coupon code. So if you use the code FIRE, if you just Google Omega Quant Complete test, it'll come up. It's $100, but if you use the FIRE code, you'll get $10 off, 10% off of any Omega Quant tests. There is also, if you look on the website, there's a 2-pack. If you want to, you know, measure once now and then do some dietary intervention and measure later, or if you want one test for you and one test for a friend, and that's only, I think, $190, and you can still get 10% off of that. So that will get the price per test down even less, and you'll get a full report of you. It's pretty easy. You prick your finger and put some blood onto a little gauze pad and send it back in, and they will get you results within a couple of weeks, and you'll know your levels of palmitoleic acid, and then you can compare yourself. I have a post called Membrane Phospholipid Composition of Different Populations. And so there you can see historical US, you know, fat composition, French, Italian, Chinese, and also me. So and I have a very torpid metabolism. And so you can compare yourself to different healthy populations. And you can also look at, if you want to know about individual fats and different ratios, you can also compare yourself to that epic Potsdam study that I was talking about. You need to understand a little bit about statistics to really dig into this paper, but it's not too bad, I don't think. I don't know. Maybe it's complicated, but I will also say, just while I'm looking at this one more time, another very strong indicator of diabetes risk is the ratio of monounsaturated fats to polyunsaturated fats. For that same reason that I was talking about, is that the people who are going to get diabetic are the torpid ones. They're going to have more monounsaturated fat in their, you know, in their body stores compared to the amount of polyunsaturated fats that they have. And that's why. So yeah, Omega Quant Complete, you can get your whole blood numbers back. There's some comparison groups to get you started. I'll try to do more. I'm going to dig through the literature and try to find more populations to compare yourself against on the website coming up, and use the coupon code FIRE, FIRE, and you'll get 10% off the test. Okay, that's it for today. I hope you all enjoyed it. I think I tried to give you some interesting stuff, not get too deep in the weeds on the molecular biology. That's for the blog. You can read all about it. For these episodes, I feel obligated to say it, but we can kind of race through it, and then we get to talk about pigs, right? And so have a good one, and I will see you next time. I've got a lot of good shows coming up. I think we're going to have some friends on, going to do some interviews. I think we're going to take a trip through upstate New York, to the agriculture parts of upstate New York, because I want to talk a little bit about agriculture and how it pertains to all of this, because that's been part of my life for the last 15 years. So come back for more. Going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for listening. See you later.